Greetings, and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2016 first quarter earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Scott Wolny, Chief Executive Officer of Atlas Financial. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Stacy, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. We are very pleased to report a solid start for 2016 with a strong first quarter driven by continued premium growth across our nationwide distribution platform, profitable underwriting performance highlighted again by an improved combined ratio, and continued above-average return on equity and book value appreciation. Today, we'll discuss Atlas's results and share our thoughts regarding the niche within commercial auto on which we focus, along with some thoughts on commercial auto generally. Our target market continues to display favorable pricing trends, and we feel we have a high level of visibility with respect to expectations for the coming year. We'll also highlight some operating initiatives that we've executed to ensure our organization continues to improve as we grow, leveraging technology and analytics. I'll now turn it over to Paul to provide details about our quarterly materials and review our policy regarding forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its 2016 first quarter financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and risk factors discussed in the risk factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2015. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. We will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the earnings release info selection. For those of you following along with our presentation, we'll begin on slide four. With that, I'd now like to turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. During our last quarterly earnings call, we highlighted the fact that Atlas achieved our goals for 2015 and shared our forecast for certain key metrics in 2016. In summary, from a growth and profitability standpoint, we noted that we believe we can continue to write business at a better than 60% loss ratio with incremental rate increases while growing in excess of 30%. We also believe Atlas can produce high teens returns on equity that exceed the industry by 500-1,000 basis points, provided market conditions remain favorable. From an operating efficiency standpoint, our goal is to maintain an overall expense ratio within the 24.5%-26.5% target range we've previously communicated. As discussed before, we are likely to remain on the high side of this range while the company continues to have significant organic growth opportunities. We expect to write between $260 million and $290 million in gross written premiums for the full year 2016 and feel very confident that our current capital position will allow us to achieve this growth on a self-funded basis. As always, I want to clarify that this premium figure is an estimated range, not a goal. We will always put a priority on margin and operating leverage over premium growth on an absolute basis. Our first quarter results demonstrate that we're off to a solid start to the year and are well-positioned to continue growing the business consistent with the goals we've laid out. Key elements of our financial results for the quarter, as highlighted on slide four, include increased underwriting profit at approximately double the amount generated in the same quarter last year and managed growth in gross written premiums. Before we get into our specific results, I thought it would be helpful to highlight some key facts about the industry in general, especially as they relate to our chosen niche market positioning. Atlas's strategic focus is to always be a leading insurance provider in specialty markets, delivering a true value proposition in an operationally efficient manner that enables us to outperform the broader property casualty industry. Underwriting profit is at the heart of our strategy. We will never try to be everything to everybody. To the contrary, we target a subset of the market for very specific reasons. This strategy is delivering the intended result. While the broader property and casualty industry and the more general commercial auto segment is facing a variety of challenges, our results continue to be strong, and forward-looking trends, about which I'll talk later on this call, remain healthy in our sub-segment. We've consistently indicated that based on our hyper-focus and specialized business model, Atlas should be well-positioned to deliver stronger margins with a goal of always exceeding the industry return on equity. Current data indicates that the commercial auto insurance segment represents approximately $31.3 billion of the overall $591 billion annual property and casualty insurance industry premiums in the U.S. in 2015. Our market research indicates that the niche on which we focus represents approximately $2.25 billion of the broader commercial auto premium. To be clear, this figure includes only full-time professional taxi, limo, livery, and paratransit drivers. Some of these drivers are dispatched either part-time or full-time by transportation network companies. Part-time drivers using personal cars who are being dispatched via, quote, ride-sharing, unquote, apps are incremental to the addressable market we target and are not included in the $2.25 billion market size I mentioned. As regulations continue to evolve across the country, and if these drivers are required to purchase commercial insurance in the same way traditional operators do, the size of the market for our products will expand further. Generally speaking, policies or regulations mandating safety and appropriate insurance coverage are positive for our business. There are a number of moving parts in this burgeoning expansion market, and new information develops on a weekly basis. Recently, a number of new specialty-focused transportation network companies have launched. Some are true startups, and others were developed by traditional taxi and livery operators. We are working with some and talking with many. Our research confirms that in most cases, until regulation and/or business policy mandates that appropriate insurance be purchased, the private passenger rideshare market will not support the premium level necessary to generate an underwriting profit. We will be prepared and well-positioned to expand into these tangential markets at such time as we're confident that demand will support adequate pricing and recognize the value of the products and services that Atlas provides. Our commitment to machine learning-based analytics in partnership with multiple external technology partners will also play an important role in this area as well. In the meantime, we're very optimistic about the prospects in our current target market. Insurance is a cyclical business. With that in mind, our goal is to properly position the business in order to maximize our returns at each point in the cycle. We believe we have at least roughly 12 to 18 months of visibility with respect to pricing, giving us a good idea of where we are in the cycle. At present, the price environment is favorable, and we are not seeing any signs of a new disruptive entrant into our niche market. Furthermore, as broader commercial auto continues to pursue rate increases, it seems unlikely that larger generalists will outsource underwriting to intermediaries like managing general agents. Both of these things give us confidence that our market will not soften in the near term. Obviously, this is something that we monitor carefully and intend to be very transparent should we see even early signs of a market shift. We will also be prepared to take full advantage of attractive M&A opportunities as we did early in Atlas's life cycle when the market was soft. As shown on slide five, in the quarter, our core commercial auto premiums grew by over 42%. To support this growth in a managed and healthy fashion, Atlas has maintained steady statutory operating leverage and invested in people and technology. Year-over-year growth was achieved in the majority of markets in which we write across the country in the first quarter. Additionally, after successfully integrating Global Liberty into the Atlas Group of Companies in 2015, we are focused on leveraging that platform in order to continue our growth in the large and important New York market. From a net written premium to GAAP equity standpoint, we are comfortable that using the capital management tools we have put in place in the form of our debt facility and quota share reinsurance program will allow us to manage operating leverage to increase throughout 2016 without creating pressure on our ratings. Virtually all of our operating metrics are at the best level seen since Atlas's inception, enabling us to drive strong bottom-line results and return on equity. Net income after tax for the quarter was $4.8 million, or 38 cents per diluted common share. This compares with $2.1 million, or 17 cents, in last year's first quarter. Please note that for the last several quarters, we've been providing non-GAAP operating income comparisons as we transition to a normalized corporate tax rate in 2015. With that now behind us, our tax rate should be comparable period to period at the normal U.S. federal tax rate, and thus we will not be providing this non-GAAP comparison going forward unless there's a special situation where it may be helpful to provide additional clarity for investors. Book value per diluted common share for Atlas at March 31, 2016 is $10.73. Atlas has increased book value over each of the past 14 quarters with a 5.7% increase over Q4 2015 and a 16.3% increase over Q1 2015. Overall, it was a very successful result. We like to make a point of emphasizing the fact that, while we're proud of our results in the period, we are managing our business for the long term rather than quarter over quarter. On slide 6, you can see the positive year-over-year trends relative to both our loss and expense ratios. As we've discussed previously, our loss ratio can vary quarter over quarter, but as you can see, our result was very good and continued a trend that has been several years in the making. Typically, it takes approximately 18 months for the effect of pricing activity to be seen in our financial results. Our first quarter loss ratio of 59.7% was roughly in line with our full year 2015 loss ratio of 59.2%. Both of which are consistent with the pricing activities undertaken in 2013 and 2014. As noted earlier, it is our expectation that the impact of more recent pricing activity in 2015, coupled with the implementation of new analytics tools, will result in further improvements in this area. On slide 7, we've displayed our in-force premium, which was $220.6 million as of March 31, 2016. The green portions of the bar in 2015 show the premium resulting from the Global Liberty acquisition. With that fully integrated in 2015, any resulting growth in 2016 and beyond will be organic, so on a go-forward basis, we will focus only on overall growth until such time as another potential acquisition is made. On slide 8, our premium by state is summarized for the quarter. As we've noted before, the Global Liberty acquisition resulted in New York being our largest state on a percentage basis. With a stated goal of achieving proportionate market share across the country, or approximately 20% of the $2.25 billion in addressable premiums in our niche during favorable market conditions, we still have ample room to leverage our current distribution for growth with desired underwriting results. A key theme we like to reiterate is the role that our agency partners play in our successful growth. As the conduit between Atlas and its policyholders, agents play an important role in communicating our value to the marketplace, while at the same time evaluating accounts to bring us quality underwriting opportunities. We are selective in the agency partners we work with, seeking those that are finely attuned to the needs of our marketplace, along with the value we bring to it. It is worth noting that while we elected not to appoint a meaningful number of new agents in the first quarter based on the fact that we feel confident our current channel is efficient and represents us effectively on a nationwide basis, we were approached by a record number of agents seeking contracts with Atlas. This is another good indication that market conditions remain favorable from our perspective. It is also demonstrative of the fact that we will never compromise underwriting profit for top-line growth. We look to our agency partners as a source of valuable market intelligence. With a national network of specialized, focused agents, we are able to gain valuable insight into where our market is headed, allowing us to be proactive in our operations. We are also leveraging our national footprint to assist agents in understanding potential areas of industry expansion within light commercial auto. One aspect of this innovative approach includes expanding brand awareness among the increasing number of owner-operators who are being dispatched via mobile apps and ensuring that our agents and customers are properly informed of both the opportunity and the impact on their business. As this market continues to expand and develop, we're committed to ensuring that our internal research and development, as well as technology and analytics partnerships, position us effectively to generate profitable business in new areas as opportunities materialize. That said, we continue to remain committed to the traditional operators who represent the bulk of our business and the addressable market overall as well. Turning to slide 9, we show metrics that help us monitor and evaluate the efficacy of our distribution channel, as well as the strength of our brand and market conditions. Our pricing and product management have delivered consistent results in connection with these metrics throughout the past 3 years. In late Q3 of 2015, we began rolling out a new point-of-sale system. As noted last quarter, the implementation impacted the format of the data seen on slide 10 for Q4 of last year and again in Q1. In the new system, we are tracking all submissions, not just those that we quote. As a result, the numerator in our hit ratio has increased, and the resulting target level is 52%. At our Investor Day next week, we'll highlight some of the positive trends that this innovation has had in our operations, along with other key analytics and technology partnerships. On slide 10, we show new business submissions, renewal rates, and total vehicles in force. Renewal retention remains strong, and we're managing to an  85% target. New business submissions are tracking ahead of last year, which is generally a positive indicator of future business. The proportionate number of owner-operators as a percentage of all applicants continues to increase as well. As we've discussed before, this trend was anticipated, and it's positive from Atlas's perspective, given our focus on smaller accounts. Moving to slide 11, we know that managing volume, operating margin, and financial leverage should result in the maximizing of return on common equity and long-term value creation for shareholders. At March 31st, 2016, our operating leverage, as measured by net written premium to statutory surplus, remained roughly 1.5 to 1. This ratio has been relatively flat as our retained statutory earnings grew and we utilized our quota share and debt facilities. Managing this ratio is important from a regulatory and rating agency perspective. At the same time, our gross written premium to GAAP equity dropped slightly to 1.38 to 1 during Q1 as a result of retained earnings growing marginally faster as a percentage than premium. And there's room for this leverage to increase without creating a need to raise external capital. I'll reiterate that we regard being a good steward of capital as a critical element of our business and are committed to ensure that this capability is always treated as a core competency. As communicated previously, our upward bounds for the company's operating ratio is 2 to 1, and we do expect our leverage to move up in this range during the upcoming year. With the objective of self-funding organic growth in mind, we will ensure that our operating leverage is properly maintained. We plan to continue to utilize the reinsurance and debt facilities put in place in 2014 and 2015 to improve our GAAP operating ratio while maintaining healthy statutory ratios as growth may require. With that, I will once again turn the call over to Paul for a more detailed review of our financial results, and then I'll return for a discussion of the market and outlook for 2016.
Thanks, Scott. Our financial overview in the slide deck begins on slide 13. As always, we encourage you to reach out to Scott or myself with any follow-up questions. Gross premium written increased 42.4% to $64 million compared to $45 million for the three-month period ended March 31, 2015. The primary driver of this growth was the continued market expansion that Scott has highlighted and continued pricing improvement across the company's core lines. At March 31, 2016, in-force premium was $220.6 million, and the company's gross unearned premium reserve was $118.8 million. We continue to cede 15% of gross premiums written under quota share contract for American Country, American Service, and Gateway, which began in Q2 of 2015. Also, during the first quarter of 2016, we renewed Global Liberty's reinsurance program with similar terms to those utilized by our other subsidiaries, which ultimately reduced the effective cost of the program. For 2016, Global Liberty's reinsurance cession level was increased to 25% versus the 2015 cession rate of 20% of subject written premium. Net premium earned increased by 38.4% in the three-month period ended March 31, 2016, to $41.9 million. Atlas's loss ratio increased to 59.7% in the three-month period ended March 31, 2016, from 56.1% in the three-month period ended March 31, 2015. The loss ratio increase relative to the prior period was primarily due to unfavorable development on mandatory assigned risk programs which represented 0.7% of this ratio in the quarter. Also, for the three-month period ended March 31, 2015, favorable development on Gateway's commercial program created a 6.2% decrease in the loss ratio for this prior period. Underwriting expense is comprised of a combination of acquisition costs, which are agent commissions and premium tax expenses, net of ceding commissions received under our quota share reinsurance contracts, plus other underwriting expenses. Excluding the impact from share-based compensation expenses and the impacts related to acquisitions and stock-based purchase agreements, the underwriting expense ratio was 24.7% in the three-month period ended March 31, 2016, compared to 26.9% in the prior year quarter. We continue to see our underwriting expense ratio falling within our target range of the 24.5% to 26.5% of net premium earned. Overall, Atlas's combined ratio for the three-month period ended March 31, 2016 was 84.4% compared to 89.8% for the three-month period ended March 31, 2015. Underwriting profit, which is the income produced prior to investment income, increased to $6.5 million from $3.1 million in the prior year period, representing a 110.9% increase. Atlas generated net investment income of $653,000 and $520,000 for the quarters ended March 31, 2016 and 15, respectively, as well as $239,000 and $137,000 of realized gains for the same periods, respectively. The gross annualized investment yield on our fixed income portfolio was 2.1%. for the quarter ended March 31, 2016. In the quarter, there were approximately $327,000 in losses related to private placement investments, ILS funds, and private placement investments backed by real estate, which are accounted for under the equity method. These investments represent less than 5% of our cash and invested assets, and we expect them to return to a gain position in future quarters. Typically, gains from these investments have offset our investment expenses, which have been approximately $200,000 per quarter. Atlas reported net income of $4.8 million during the three-month period ended March 31, 2016, compared to net income of $2.1 million during the three-month period ended March 31, 2015, representing a 125.1% increase. Atlas generated 38 cents per common share diluted for the three-month period ended March 31, 2016. This compares to 17 cents per common share diluted as reported for the three-month period ended March 31, 2015. For the first quarter of 2016, annualized return on common equity was 15%. On slide 14, we provide more detail regarding the income from operating activities. This analysis should be helpful in understanding the business outside of a few atypical items we've noted in past quarters. This internal non-GAAP performance measure is used in the management of the company's operations. It represents operational results excluding, as applicable, net realized gains or losses, net impairment charges recognized in earnings, and other items. Adjusted operating income after tax, which is an indicator of the overall incremental profitability growth of our organization, was $4.4 million, or 34 cents per common share diluted in the first quarter of 2016, as compared to $3.5 million, or 27 cents per common share diluted in the same quarter last year, representing a 25.7% increase. On slide 15, we detail the components of book value. We increased book value to $10.73 during the first quarter of 2016 from $10.15 at December 31, 2015. For the bottom of the slide, we step through the key elements that impacted book value year to date. Over the next two slides, we outline Atlas's balance sheet position. Atlas's cash and invested assets at March 31, 2016 increased to $238.4 million compared to $233.4 million at December 31, 2015. The increase is primarily attributable to the increase in premium writings. Unearned premium balances, which represent premiums corresponding to the time periods remaining on the underlying in-force policies, were $118.8 million compared to $108.2 million at December 31, 2015. This increase is the result of continued organic growth. As noted earlier, during the first quarter of 2015, we established a credit facility with Fifth Third Bank, which allows us to draw up to $30 million at LIBOR plus 450 basis points for the use in connection with our statutory entities, plus another $5 million at LIBOR plus 275 basis points for other general corporate purposes. As confirmed via 8K this morning, the terms of our credit facility with Fifth Third Bank were enhanced. The initial one-year revolver was extended by 2 additional years, and the draw period related to the 5-year credit facility was extended through the end of this calendar year. Flexibility was also added to allow the redemption of certain preferred shares, which may be utilized in connection with the conclusion of the post-closing components of the stock purchase agreement related to Gateway. The interest rates, as previously communicated, along with the other terms of the facility, remain unchanged. To date, we have drawn $15.5 million from the $30 million credit facility and infused these funds into the ASI pool companies, which include American Country, American Service, and Gateway, in the form of surplus notes. We also drew $2.4 million on the $5 million credit facility to support the needs of the premium finance company we acquired in the Global Liberty transaction. Interest expense related to this facility was $233,000 in the current quarter. As an investment philosophy, we continue to place a priority on preservation of capital to support future premium growth. Our investment duration of 3.2 years remains consistent with the expected liquidity needs and claim payout patterns, and the majority of our holdings are in fixed income securities rated AA or better by S&P. The high quality of our investment portfolio was detailed on slide 17. Because we intend to hold securities to maturity, while any increases in interest rates could create an unrealized loss in the short term, we would not expect such losses to be realized. Working with our outside investment advisor, we monitor positions in our portfolio closely, especially in light of any recent world events. With that, let me turn the call back to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks, Paul. I'll now highlight some of the market trends we're seeing and provide additional color on Atlas's niche within commercial auto. We've been consistent in communicating several key themes that provide a positive macro backdrop for our business. First, despite our recent growth, we have still only captured a single-digit market share in most of the states in which we operate. This provides us with ample runway to grow as we pursue our target of a 20% market share in each of the markets we serve. Second, commercial auto is a high-frequency line of insurance. This allows us to distinguish ourselves in the market, especially relative to generalists that may enter our space. The operators with whom we work depend on us to provide timely and effective claim service in order to maximize the uptime of their vehicular assets and protect them from non-meritorious liabilities. That service component creates real value to our customers and allows us to charge a premium price for the products we write. We also expect that it will allow us some buffer against aggressive price competition in our markets when softening is ultimately observed down the road. A third element that has been getting more attention recently is the growth of ride-sharing services such as Uber and Lyft, as well as mobile phone and internet-based dispatching technologies designed for more traditional operators. Overall, we see these emergent technologies creating an overall increase in the usage of on-demand ridership, whether it occurs in a traditional taxi, livery vehicle, or in a rideshare vehicle. As the ride-sharing market evolves, we support the inclusion of proper insurance products that safeguard both drivers and passengers. With this evolution, we see Atlas as well-positioned to benefit given our solid track record, expertise, and significant data in the specialty commercial auto space, coupled with our commitment regarding technology and analytics. While research and development in this area is ongoing, we are committed to exercising the appropriate level of discipline and patience necessary to ensure that we achieve the same expected underwriting profit from any expansion line as we do in our current core business. Recapping a trend we've seen over the last several years, slide 19 depicts loss performance for the commercial auto sector versus the broader P&C group. Beginning in 2012, the commercial auto group began to experience greater loss performance due primarily to increased severity. We have not experienced these issues primarily based on our narrow focus, expertise as a specialist, and the relatively lower limit profile of our business. While ours is a high-frequency segment, severity is generally much lower than broader commercial auto. We actually look at this with a cup-half-full perspective. A high-frequency marketplace demands a heightened level of service when it comes to claims processing so that asset downtime can be minimized. The independent agents that we work with know this and that this is an area where we excel and are thus further motivated to direct their customers to Atlas. This, coupled with overall increases in commercial auto pricing, should create future buoyancy in our space. On slides 20 and 21, we provide recent industry pricing trends. In recent quarters, we've begun to see some retrenching of pricing, which is a positive for Atlas, as generalist competitors are less likely to attempt to disrupt our market. Additionally, weaker players find challenge markets to be a more significant headwind than we do, thus creating more incremental opportunities for us to pursue targeted horizontal M&A. Data from the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, shown on slide 20, illustrates commercial auto pricing in general increasing again in Q1. Notably, as seen on slide 21, the smaller the account size, the more insulated the account was with respect to pricing declines in the broader market. With most of Atlas's target market consisting of small fleet operators and individual entrepreneurs, we are well positioned relative to generalists who focus on larger accounts. Recent industry notes have highlighted the fact that specialty insurance is outperforming the industry overall. As we grow, we will always focus on specialty rather than broader niche markets. We have a track record of successful acquisitions that were incremental in terms of infrastructure, accretive both to income and book value, and with attractive valuations. We are cultivating a pipeline to ensure that Atlas is well positioned to build on this capability down the road. Let me conclude by reiterating our estimates and thoughts on 2016, which are much the same as when we spoke with you in March. We believe that we can continue to write business below a 60% loss ratio with incremental rate increases in the mid-single digits while organically growing in excess of 30% on a full year-over-year basis. Provided market conditions remain favorable, we believe Atlas can produce high teens return on equity that exceed the industry by 500 to 1,000 basis points. Our management team is committed to managing our overall expense ratio within the 24.5% to 26.5% target range we previously communicated. As discussed before, we are likely to remain on the high side of this range for the full year 2015 while the company continues to have significant organic growth opportunities. Now that our new policy management system has been implemented, we are running off legacy systems and will always look for other incremental opportunities to continuously improve and drive down operating efficiency in the future. We are also excited about the potential relative to our increased use of predictive analytics and in-vehicle technologies to add another level of sophistication and efficiency to our operations. And, as always, it is important to acknowledge the great, experienced, and dedicated members of the Atlas team. None of these achievements would be possible without their commitment and expertise. As I noted at the beginning of the call, we expect to write between $260 and $290 million in premiums for the full year 2016 and feel very confident that our current capital position will allow us to achieve this growth on a self-funded basis. As always, I want to clarify that this premium figure is an estimated range, not a goal. We will always put a priority on margin and operating leverage over premium growth on an absolute basis. It is also important to note that as observed in prior years, there is seasonality in our business and the rate of growth in any given quarter can vary as a result. With that, let's turn it over for questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first question comes from Paul Newsome with Sandler O'Neill & Partners. Please proceed.
Good morning. Congratulations on the quarter. I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about how you see the level of price increases relative to underlying claim cost inflation.
Sure. So we're observing claim cost inflation at about 1%-2%. In terms of new business, we are pursuing high single digits, so 7%-9% in most geographies, some more, some less, depending on the competitive environment locally. And for renewal business, consistent with what we communicated on last quarter's call, we are seeing more moderate rate increases of kind of mid-single digits, I'd say 3 to 5%, depending on the profitability of the renewal account and sequentially, the amount of rate increase that they've experienced over the last couple of years, depending on how long they've been insured with us. So hopefully that gives you a good sense for, kind of the spectrum of increase, but also the net benefit to us based on the expected loss cost inflation.
Yeah, so how mechanically should that translate into loss ratio benefits?
Well, really
that is the way that we like to think about it. So, we've indicated that we are pricing to below a 60% in all areas. I think if you use the past activity as a guide, we've mentioned that it takes about 12 to 18 months for price activity to kind of flow into the financial result. If you look at the year-over-year change, 2013 to 2014, we saw about a 1.6% improvement in the loss ratio on a full-year basis. 2014 to 2015, it was about a 3.1% increase on a full-year basis. So 2015 to 2016 for the full year, I think we at this point expect the improvement to be somewhere in between those two amounts. So, call it somewhere between 1.5% to 3% full year. And again, as we always comment on a quarter to quarter basis, there can be some variation in the actual carried loss ratio.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the questions, Paul.
Our next question comes from Ryan Barnes with Janney. Please proceed.
Hi, great. Thanks. Good morning, everybody. Just had a clarification on the other income, which it sounds like some of the real estate and I guess catastrophe bond investments. Do those investments run on any sort of lag, or are those reported on a real-time basis?
There may be a quarter lag in some of those valuation reports that we get, or even a month lag in some of the valuation reports. So there's not much of a lag between the actual results and when we record it.
Okay, great. So again, I'm just trying to figure out. So most of the pain of obviously the January and February markets are showing up in the current results.
Correct.
Great. Thanks for that. And then secondly, on the revolver, and I think you guys noted that you may look at some of the preferred issuance. Are there any prepayment penalties on the preferreds or any one-time cost that we should think about?
No, there's no prepayment penalties on the revolver, nor is there any penalty if we were to redeem preferred shares in connection with, in this case, the Gateway transaction. We are in that window. The terms of the stock purchase agreement allow us to begin redeeming preferred shares that were issued as consideration or partial consideration for that acquisition after the third anniversary, but we are not obligated to do so, and they are not convertible by the holder until the fifth anniversary. So we're basically in a two-year window that gives us some flexibility in terms of timing and what we might do there. You might recall we had a similar structure when we acquired American Country and American Service. And once we were in the elective window to redeem, we did ultimately negotiate a discounted redemption. And so we did that early in the window. But obviously, we'll look at every situation independently and do what we think is going to be most accretive in terms of book value.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's all I had.
Thanks for the questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brian Hollenden with Sidoti. Please proceed.
Good morning, guys, and thanks for taking my call.
Morning.
Hi, Brian.
Can you talk about how much of your premiums were renewal business versus new business?
So overall, our renewal retention was about 85% in the quarter. And so the majority of the business that we have in force is actually renewal business. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but we certainly can derive it and provide it to you, Brian, as a follow-up for modeling purposes. But, you know, we are looking for the full year for an organic growth rate of about 30%. And so that's probably a good number to use in terms of extrapolating what full year new business would be as opposed to renewal. Obviously, the balance of the book of business would be renewal in the second through fourth quarters.
Thank you. And then gross premiums written growth occurred in 26 of the 41 states you write premium. Has competition picked up in those other states? Can you talk about that dynamic?
It's not really so much of an issue of competition as when we implement incremental rate increases, sometimes it does take time for the market to catch up. And so in certain instances where we put significant rate into the market, we do see a bit of a lag in terms of when the new business is able to start coming online at those higher rates. Obviously, that is something we monitor very closely to make sure that we're not, you know, being too opportunistic. The second thing really is that in some areas, you know, prices are at a level where, you know, sort of the market tolerance for incremental rate increases may start flattening out. And so, again, we want to manage that. And that is part of why I commented earlier in response to the first question that, you know, the amount of benefit on the bottom line in terms of rate activity in 2016 is probably going to be somewhere in between what we saw in the last 2 years. So we are still expecting marginal benefit. We are not seeing a significant impact from new competitors, but the reality of it is, you know, we do have a premium product. We charge a premium price for it, but there is only so much incremental rate that we're going to be able to get and maintain the hit ratios that we target. So it's all really a balance, and we try to manage all of those things to maximize that combination of margin and operating leverage. And so that's really, you know, what we're using in terms of evaluating the information and making decisions.
Thanks. I'll jump back in the queue.
Okay. Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dan Farrell with Piper Jaffray. Please proceed.
Hi,
morning,
and good morning.
Morning.
Dan.
Just a question on growth and seasonality. If I look at the, if I'm doing the math right here, the organic contribution in the first quarter seems a little lower than sort of 30% you're talking about. And, you know, now that we've sort of passed comparisons on M&A that's been done, can you just remind us again of some of the seasonality that impacts your business quarter to quarter and, you know, what we should be thinking about?
Sure. So I think the two key issues with seasonality in the first quarter, Chicago has a common renewal date of January 1st for taxi business, and New York has a common renewal date of March 1st for most of its taxi and livery business. And so as a result, it has been the case that seasonality or growth due to seasonality in the first quarter has always been relatively lower than other quarters. You know, it's also the case that the companies we own have their most mature market positions in those two cities and states. Although, as I, you know, commented earlier, we still expect that there's meaningful opportunities for growth, in particular in New York. The second seasonality impact that we see in our book is in the third quarter. Our excess taxi program, which is also written for the New York market, has a renewal date in the third quarter. And so that will, to some extent, impact the amount of percentage year-over-year growth we see there. Outside of that, I would expect that the second and fourth quarters probably would see, you know, seasonality similar to what you'd see if you looked at those quarters relative to the other quarters in prior years. But again, we're really trying to look at things on a full-year basis and give, you know, good guidance in terms of what we think the overall expectation is going to be, because it is difficult to really predict, you know, quarter over quarter, given the dynamics of the market that we're in. So hopefully that's helpful, just in terms of providing some perspective.
It is. And then just a question around, you know, expenses. And, you know, I know you've given the guidance range for total expense ratio. How are you thinking about pacing of investments? And I know you've talked a lot about also, you know, increased use of analytics, predictive modeling, et cetera. I'm just wondering how you're thinking about pacing those investments through through growth and sort of how you see the trend of expense ratio. Thanks.
Sure. So we, you know, we do want to manage the expense ratio within the 24.5% to 26.5% range. You know, we've commented before that as we're growing at the healthy growth rates that we currently are, you know, we do want to make sure we're reinvesting in people and infrastructure to keep up with that growth. So that is a near-term but relatively variable expense. The second piece is, you know, as we over time get to a more mature market position, you know, we do expect to drive the expense ratio down into the lower end of that range. And as we're doing that, you know, we will probably be plowing back more dollars into, you know, future horizontal expansion, research development, et cetera, into new opportunities down the road. But right now, the real focus is making sure that we are delivering that strong value proposition that allows us to charge, you know, a premium price for premium product, really maximize the opportunity in the current market environment, but still maintaining an expense ratio, you know, within the range, albeit probably on the high end that, that we've described. The second thing that I think is worth noting, and I touched on this, and we'll talk a lot more about it at our Investor Day next week, we have established a number of key partnerships with analytics partners as well as technology partners. And so that gives us the opportunity to really work with them on innovative, forward-thinking applications that, to a great extent, and even in some cases, are not used at all in the commercial auto space. But, you know, where they are making the capital investment in technologies, and we're really providing the intellectual capital to help them think about how their technologies can be deployed in the insurance space and obviously help make sure that we are able to be a first mover in terms of doing that. So, you know, when it comes to some of those types of investments, it should not be a capital-intensive investment on our part. In other words, we won't have a significant amount of fixed costs related to those because we're partnering with technology companies who are already, you know, going down that path. We're really working with them to make sure that we can benefit mutually from working together, but without having to make a significant investment on our end in terms of you know, the technology development itself.
That's helpful stuff. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chris Brown with Arcedius Capital. Please proceed.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just had a question on the guidance for the high teens return on equity. Should I take that as that you intend to be exiting the year at a high teens return on average equity for the fourth quarter, or is that more intended to say that you expect a full year 2016 high teens return on average equity?
Well, so the first quarter annualized was 15%. Obviously, we would like to improve it from there. And so certainly we'd expect to exit the year higher. But for the full year, it should also be greater than the 15% that we saw in the first quarter. So, you know, our plan for this year, you know, barring an incremental acquisition or something like that, would be to continue to improve quarter over quarter in terms of return on equity, both because we do expect our GAAP operating margin to migrate up in a managed way for the reasons I touched on, and also because we do expect to continue to improve our operating margin.
Okay, great. And in terms of being self-funded for the year, is there a certain stock price at which, you know, say 2x book or 2.5x book, you know, somewhere where you would, the calculation between seeding versus issuing new equity kind of changes and you would be more predisposed to issuing new stock?
Well, you know, I think our view has always been that we would not raise equity capital just because we could. And so, you know, our expectation is that if we were to raise equity capital, use incremental equity, it would generally be because it's in connection with a specific significant transaction, you know, an acquisition, not simply to raise capital for the sake of doing that. You know, and again, we have internal tools that we feel comfortable allow us not only to be flexible, but also it gives us the ability to take pressure off, you know, off the balance sheet from a statutory leverage standpoint, in a very frictionless way. So borrowing against the line or utilizing incremental quota share have relatively low costs of capital and allow us to utilize them and then unwind them, again, in a relatively frictionless way. And so for all those reasons, you know, that would be our primary way of managing our capital leverage, as opposed to just thinking about selling stock simply because we could.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Chris.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Ron Bodman with Capital Returns. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks, and good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
I had a couple of questions. Scott, you mentioned a couple of times, and it sort of you roughly use the words, you know, we target a retention ratio of, I want to say 85, but in any sense, you sort of, you highlighted the point that you target a retention ratio, and I don't hear that too often, and I'm wondering if why you, in essence, have a target ratio. I can obviously understand sort of a underwriting level of profitability or pricing adequacy, but having an explicit retention rate is noteworthy to me.
Yeah, the reason that we do that, first, it's important to put it in the context of where we are in the market cycle in our niche. So we are in a favorable side of the cycle, and so the business we're writing, obviously, is at a combined ratio in the mid-80s right now. And so, you know, we look at that margin as being beneficial. And so as we continue to increase rate, when I say we're targeting a retention ratio, if we increase rate on renewals to a point where the retention ratio starts to drop, we may rethink whether or not we want to be more moderate. And the reason that that's valuable is at the current margin, if we can maximize the combination of margin and operating leverage because of the fact that we do still have, for lack of a better description, some dry powder in terms of our capital base, that is going to be return on equity maximizing for us. If we were in a softer market cycle, I think we would look at that retention ratio differently. We would be focused almost exclusively on preserving underwriting margin and not thinking about it so much as a way to moderate, you know, increase in price. So some of it is specific to where we are in the market cycle, and it also is coupled with the fact that, you know, again, we do have the opportunity to increase operating leverage without needing to go out and raise equity capital, and we want to take advantage of that at the kind of margins we're currently generating or better.
Okay, thank you on that. Now, I had a question about, and I clearly recognize that you are a specialty commercial auto writer, but obviously there are other segments of sort of the wheels business, the standard auto, and even, I guess, the non-standard auto business, is seeing some dynamics in the area of frequency and severity. And I'm wondering if you have any evidence of those developments in your, again, specialty areas of commercial auto.
Sure. No, it's a great question. It is something we watch very carefully. And in fact, we like to look at that from a very skeptical point of view. In other words, you know, if something's affecting lots of other people in the industry, we start with the perspective that, you know, it should affect us, or why shouldn't it affect us? We're not thinking about it. You know, we don't want to fit the data to our conclusion, in other words. But so with that perspective in mind, you know, we do look at it very carefully. We have not seen any significant upticks, I think, in the area of frequency. You know, what we've heard from a lot of the larger, especially personal lines writers, is that frequency is up because of low gas prices, and which is resulting in increased miles driven and also distracted driving. So in the case of our niche market, our clients generally will use their vehicles to the extent they can to fully deploy them in the market. In other words, if there's demand for rides, the vehicle is going to be out on the road picking up rides. And so the price of gas, it does not create much elasticity in terms of miles driven in our niche. So I think that's the first reason we haven't really seen a change in frequency. The second thing is, you know, just being blunt, I think our drivers have always had a tendency to be somewhat distracted. There's a passenger in the back. They're using navigation tools. They're dealing with dispatch. And so, you know, in fact, most of our drivers and the operators that dispatch our drivers have been really aggressive about discouraging texting and some of the other things that are creating distracted driving on the personal line side. So I think the fact that some of that distraction, just because of the nature of the job, is already baked into the results that we use for underwriting purposes, and we have obviously got a lot of that data across the nationwide, you know, market where we write because of the heritage of all the companies we own, coupled with the fact that, you know, again, these are professionals who I think are really, you know, being managed or trying to manage that experience. And so you don't see as much arbitrary texting and driving and that sort of thing. So again, it's something we're monitoring. We're obviously wanting to make sure we're increasingly looking at ways to underwrite on a behavior-based sort of basis. But, you know, I think that's our current conclusion on frequency. And then in terms of severity, that's really a little bit different, and primarily the fact that most of our accidents are relatively low speed, low impact, and so it's more fender benders than kind of these devastating highway accidents that a truck might have. The second thing is the limit profile is just a lot lower. You know, the typical limit we have is going to be less than $1 million for virtually all of our segments, especially taxi, which is our largest segment. And so, you know, you don't see the kind of significant multi-million dollar claims, at least settlements, that you're going to see in the heavy commercial side. And again, I think that's a lot of what's been driving severity, you know, in terms of the broader commercial market.
Okay. And then I believe you have a very small book in Texas. And obviously there's been some nasty weather in the first quarter, which, you know, is presumably reflected in your numbers. But I was curious to know about April. I think there was, you know, incredible flooding in Houston and then monster-sized hail in San Antonio. Anything noteworthy sort of beyond the otherwise expected level of weather losses that you could mention or –
Sure. No, it's a good question. I mean, our business as a rule is not very catastrophe exposed. You know, we do not insure physical damage on garages or other physical infrastructure. We are only writing physical damage probably on about 20% to 30% of the fleets we insure. Most of our exposure is for the third-party liability. And so, you know, the third-party liability doesn't really increase when you have storm activity. In fact, sometimes it can decrease because you don't have a lot of people out on the street, you know, hailing, you know, cars. And as we saw, for example, with Sandy, you know, back in New York, there just wasn't a significant, you know, pickup because the vehicles that we are insuring, you know, are typically being moved kind of out of harm's way. So, you know, as I say, we haven't seen a significant increase as a result of that. I wouldn't expect it, you know, based on historical experience with other severe storms. But again, a lot of it just has to do with the fact that the thing that we're insuring or the things that we're insuring aren't the assets that tend to get damaged in the case of flooding and storms.
And my last item is really a comment or a request. Can you endeavor to report your results earlier in the season, so to speak, sort of closer to the quarter's end for which you're reporting and less close to the current quarter that you're, you know, operating within? It's you're really sort of in the last 5% of companies reporting, and I think for, you know, if I think sort of best practices or even average practices would have you several days, if not weeks, earlier.
Sure. No, I appreciate the feedback. I think some of what has informed our timing has been the fact that, you know, we have over the last 5 years made, you know, 4 acquisitions that were all relatively meaningful for the size of the business and wanted to make sure that, you know, we were managing the integration of that into the financial reporting, especially because all the companies, or at least the most recent 2 companies we bought, were private. And so there was a bit of a transition in terms of, you know, continuing to do statutory reporting, but then also layering onto it the GAAP reporting. But I think that is a fair point and certainly something we can take into consideration.
Thanks. I think also with what transpired yesterday, you'd also reduce the risk of that. So thanks and good luck and hope it continues.
Well, appreciate the questions and suggestions, Ron.
Thank you. I'd like to turn the floor back over to management for closing comments.
Great. Thanks to everyone for joining us. We look forward to seeing many of you at our annual Investor Day next Monday, May 16th, at our headquarters location just west of Chicago. We received favorable feedback from investors and analysts on the event we held last year and are expecting a great turnout this year as well. If you are interested in attending and have not yet RSVP'd, further information is available at the end of our conference call presentation materials. And as always, we look forward to speaking with each of you again in the future. Thanks very much.
This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.